Hey, deep fried fans. Have you ever had fried oysters? They're a great appetizer if you happen to come across some, so give them a try. This is Ellie Mae here to announce show number 15. Today, Keith and Woody sit down with Sarah Ford to discuss tips for Visual Studio, as well as how her team at Microsoft writes software using agile practices. Sarah Ford is the program manager for CodePlex, Microsoft's open source project hosting site. Prior to joining CodePlex, she worked 6 years on the Visual Studio core team. Her roles included testing the Visual Studio environment and driving the effort to make Visual Studio 2005 accessible to developers who are visually impaired. She continues to run the Visual Studio tip of the day on her blog. Okay, deep fried fans, grab that glass of sweet tea and get ready for some Gumpology.
Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of Deep Fried Bites. My main man, Woody. How are you, sir?
Good. How about you, brother Elder?
Doing fine, sir. I'm sitting down here with Miss Sarah Ford.
Hey, y'all.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a long trip today driving through the South, but I made it. And the sun's out, greeting me in the southern part of Mississippi. Here in the house of the brother elder.
That's right, folks. Sarah's actually in the house. When we're sitting down, we are really sitting down together. She's actually speaking tonight at the HubCityNUG.net user group. She's going to help us kick the group off here in Hattiesburg, which is pretty cool, huh, Sarah? Because this is the first .NET user group in Mississippi that we're kicking off tonight.
Very awesome. High five, dude. Been waiting for this for 7 years since I joined Microsoft and found out about user groups. And I'm like, hey, where are these things back home? Why don't we have one back home? So it's awesome to see this.
Yeah, we're starting one up tonight. So it's great that we can actually sit down with you. Full disclosure, we saw you at DevLink a few days ago, but we didn't have time to sit down. I'm like, well, she's coming to Hattiesburg anyway, so let's sit down and talk. So tell us, Sarah, about what's going on in Sarah's world. We know that you just announced a new book, so give us a scoop on that.
Yep, my first book called Microsoft Visual Studio Tips. It has 251 best of the best from the Tip of the Day series on my blog. And, it's live now for pre-sale on Amazon. And then should be available October 15th. And then the really cool part is I'm donating all of my author royalties or author proceeds to a scholarship fund that I've created for anyone who's a resident of my hometown, Waveland, Mississippi, to be able to go to the local community college, the Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College. And the really, even better, for me at least, is to say that when I donate the money, Microsoft matches on the dollar because of the Microsoft matching program, and that the community college is a 501(c).
So let me recap that. You took all of the Visual Studio tips and tricks that you've been publishing to your blog, like for the last year or so?
That's correct. About at the time I started the actual book writing process, I was around tip number 240 or so. But now, on Wednesday, actually, tomorrow, I actually hit number 300. So tomorrow is actually a major milestone. But yeah, I've been writing a tip every single day about Visual Studio on my blog since July of 2007, except for weekends. I don't tip on the weekends. I'm cheap that way. You know, no H on the end of my name, no tipping on weekends.
I understand. At some point, something had to hit you to say, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, because writing a book is not easy. I mean, our friend Jim Holmes, you know, wrote a book. And it took him, like, what, a year, Woody?
Yeah, it took him a long time. Took him a long time to do it.
And I figured, well, you know, all my content's written because the series have been going almost a year now. How hard could it be to put it into a book form? Yeah, 5-6 weeks, that should be easy.
But did it actually take you 6 weeks?
I got all my chapters done, the main content, done in about 5-6 weeks. I came in a few days early. Actually, I think it was 10 days early. Started towards the end of June, and I told everyone at Microsoft Press, I'm done. I've gotten all the chapters done on Argus 1st.
And, you know, this was your first book. So, I mean, you didn't have to go through the whole learning experience of book stuff or what?
Oh, I did in 5 weeks. It was something I will never, ever, ever do to myself again. I find myself saying those words so many times in my life. But yes, never again in 5 weeks. But yeah, so imagine the book writing process, everything that you learn about it from how to go from just understanding how royalties work to contracts to formatting to working with the editor to understanding what's the copy edit process to whatever I will learn tomorrow or tonight when I check email again about the book. Yeah, imagine all of that, which normally takes a year, in 5 weeks. So there are some pros and cons. Like, obviously, it's over and done within a very short time frame, but on the other flip side is it's drinking from the fire hose.
Yeah, it sounds like you were just thrown into the vat, as we say, and sink or swim.
You know, I jumped off the high dive in the deep end of the swimming pool. I knew what I was getting myself. Well, I thought I knew what I was getting myself into, but I'm one of those. Okay, I got myself into this mess. I'm determined to get out of it. For me, the 5 weeks was just getting the content done. Now we're still doing the final tweaks.
So, Sarah, what's your favorite tip in the book?
My favorite tip is how not to accidentally copy or cut blank lines. It turned out to be a favorite among the blog readers, but it's my personal favorite because once I discovered that one, I was so elated. The concept behind the tip is a lot of times you'll hit Control C for copy when you really meant to hit Control V on a blank line. And maybe it's because you're typing too fast and you don't get that your index finger over all the way, so you hit the C instead of the V. And since you're on a blank line, there's an option in Visual Studio to say, hey, you meant to do that. And so instead of pasting in your text, the editor copies the blank line. And sometimes when you realize you catch yourself doing it, you try to hit Control V as fast as you can after you accidentally hit Control C, thinking that you can outperform the editor, but I've never won. It's always been me. And when you hit Control V, instead of getting your content pasted, you actually just see a blank line staring back at you. Then you have to go back to wherever it was, either further down or up in the file, or whatever the file used to be, if it was open or something else in the solution. And then you have to repaste. And it's annoying. It's under Tools Options, Text Editor, All Languages, General, and you can uncheck that option, and then life is good. So if you hit Control-C or Control-X on a blank line, Visual Studio ignores you. Yeah, Keith is looking at me like, how did you know that Tools Options directory so well? Yeah, I if I had a dollar for every time I said, go to Tools Options Environment, yeah.
That doesn't surprise me, probably, because you speak on this a lot. So,
yeah, and I had to do a lot of screenshots this summer too, and a lot of tools options dash. Yeah, that's probably one of my top two favorite tips. My other tip that I love to demo is the box selection, which I believe has been around since the Visual Studio.net 2002 days, if not even before. There's actually two modes of selecting text in the editor. The first mode is called stream, which is what everyone's used to today. But let's say like you have a list of constants, like private constant and then the name, and the line goes on, and then you have the next line and the next line. But you want to remove the constant word on each line, but you don't want to have to do it one by one by one. But you can't select text straight down in that default stream selection. What you can do is press Alt, Shift, and holding down those two keys, either use your mouse or use the arrow keys to arrow down and over, and you can select vertical lines of text. And that way you can select the constant and then the space over, hit Delete, and then your constant is gone. And you can press Control Z to get everything back that way. And when I was demoing that at DevLink, someone on the front row kind of slammed his hand on the table and said, "I'll be doggone." and what made me smirk when he said it was like, "Wow, I haven't heard that expression in such a long time."
Yeah, for those who don't know, DevLink is held in was held this year in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. So, hearing "doggone" there is, you know, not out of the norm.
Have to bring it back. I have to bring that expression back to Microsoft. I'm sure the Seattle Lights will like it.
I'm sure. Well, I think that's good. So you got the book coming out. The book's supposed to hit the shelves when now, Sarah?
It's scheduled to be available on Amazon for shipping, to be shipped October 15th.
Okay, so we're basically calling Deep Fried Nation out there. When the book hits, go buy some copies, because all the money that you spend on that book goes directly to people in Mississippi that were hit at Waveland. And we're actually, it's kind of neat that we are recording this show, because it's the 3-year anniversary.
Yes,
of
that's why
Katrina,
I'm down here.
And that's why you're here. So, you know, we actually are in Hurricane Alley right now from Katrina. You can look outside of my backyard and see trees that are still half down and things that still need to be done. So, you know, still needs to be rebuilt down here, folks. So all the money that you do on Visual Studio Tips and Tricks with Sarah Ford will get doubled because of Microsoft's going to do it,
yes.
which is awesome. And then that's going to go to help somebody get a scholarship. Now, on the scholarship, I have a question. Is that going to be just comp sci, or is it going to be sciences, or what are you doing there exactly?
Preference is given to math and computer science majors because I was a math and computer science major at Mississippi State.
But I'm sorry about that. Go Eagles.
But
did you bring your cowbell with you?
No, I did not bring my cowbell with me. The worst part is that he's in range for me to punch him. Yes, go Bulldogs. Yes, I've actually said it on record now. But, yeah, I'm just not a football fan. I don't like sports that they don't like allow me to play in high school. Anyways, tangent aside and rants aside, I've totally forgot what I was saying. Thank you, Elder. Thank you. But no, preference is given. I can't wait for the final recording. Preference is given to math and computer science majors. However, the scholarship is available for anyone who is a resident of Waveland, Mississippi.
And they're going to go to the Gulf Coast school there. So
yeah,
they can't use it outside of there. It's got to be at that
area. The scholarship fund is with the Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College.
Now, what if somebody wanted to go to like a really good school like Southern Miss? Would you allow that?
Oh, the rivalry begins. The scholarship is with the Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College because those two campuses are much closer than Hattiesburg. There's a Jeff Davis campus, which is on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and right at the Gulfport-Biloxi border, which is about a 45-minute drive from Waveland. And then the other one, the Perkinson? I forget what the name of the city is.
It's small, whatever it is. No idea.
I believe it's slightly an hour north, but it's still shorter than Hattiesburg. So,
well, okay.
I stick my tongue out at you.
No. No Southern Miss love. Okay.
No.
And you didn't bring a cowbell. I can't believe it. For those who don't know about the cowbell, tell them about the cowbell story.
At Mississippi State, they have cowbells. What's so bad, I actually had one in my hand this morning thinking, yeah, should I buy one just to prove that like people ring cowbells here? No, I don't think so. I gave away all of mine, and I put it back down. Now I wish I kind of had it so I can make Eldo go deaf ringing it in the mic. So the students, they ring the cowbells during the football games. It's their noisemaker. And it gets so loud in the stadiums that some of the this is back in my day, back in the when did I graduate? Yeah, 2001, so 97, 2001 time frame. They actually started banning them in certain stadiums because it was just so loud. All these students just ding, da ding, da ding, da ding. Unbelievable.
I thought they did actually ban them, but students are still, you know, carrying them.
You can have them. I have no idea what the status is today, nor do I want to, bringing the cowbells into the stadiums.
But, you know, a lot of people used to paint them and color them, did all that stuff.
I actually have a cowbell story that's about Visual Studio and Bill Gates.
What?
Yes, I do. My first year at Microsoft at the company meeting. So at the company meeting, you bring noisemakers and you cheer whenever the speaker, whether it's Bill Gates or someone else, talks about your product, and everyone like, yay, and whenever it's mentioned. And this was for the Visual Studio .NET 2002 launch. So what they did was they gave us all cowbells. And I'm thinking, no way. I just graduated from Mississippi State. I'm going back to cowbells. And I still have that cowbell because it has a Visual Studio logo on it. But I don't think they realize how much noise these things make. And while Bill Gates was talking, you know, each slide had at least one reference to Visual Studio, and everyone was like, ding, the ding, the ding, the ding. And the next slide had Visual Studio, ding, the ding. When he got to the third slide, it had Visual Studio on it three times. He looks over and at us, he points and says, that was the last time, and then goes back to talking. And everyone like, ooh, and put their cowbells gently down on the ground.
That's funny. Oh, man. So if anybody's wondering, a cowbell is really loud, just so you know. Yeah. Not as loud as one of those things that they use at the games, though, those air compressor things, but still pretty loud.
Hey, Sarah, so I just pre-ordered your book, so your number just went up by one.
Sweet. Am I still in the 230,000 rank on Amazon?
I have no idea, but all I know is that I paid my money, so.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, Sarah, let's talk a little about CodePlex. What do you think?
Yay, go CodePlex. It rocks.
Now, CodePlex, for those that don't know, is the site that hosts open source software. And it's powered by a technology that came out around 2005 called Visual Studio Team Foundation Server. Actually, it's just called Team Foundation Server, but there are tools that plug into Visual Studio that help manage source code and task and tracking and bills and stuff. And so CodePlex is built on top of that, and you guys host open source projects there, which is kind of interesting because you work at the big blue ship thing that doesn't do that kind of stuff.
Yes. I like the cultural challenge of being the program manager for CodePlex and going around screaming, hey, share and open source your code here on the site. And then also going out to like tech ed and working at a booth and saying, yeah, this is CodePlex, we're Microsoft's open source project hosting site with my blue Microsoft speaker shirt on. And people are like, well, Microsoft pays you to be here, right? Well, yeah, I'm an employee. You can't be an employee. No, you're a contractor. No, I'm full-time. No, my badge is blue. But they just won't accept it. A few people are like, no way, you're a Microsoft employee. And then when they finally clicks that, I really am, it's fun to see their minds just get blown.
So, like, you're still running into people that, I mean, I would think, I mean, CodePlex has been around for how long?
CodePlex launched May 11th, 2006.
Okay, so it's been around for a few years now, right? I would think enough people have kind of heard about it and understand that, but you're still running into people that don't get it.
I'm still meeting people that haven't, maybe they haven't searched for something and have found the site or they haven't been introduced to it yet. But once they hear about it, they're quite intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine. So I remember the first time that I actually heard of you.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
The very first time.
Yes.
I was browsing around the blogosphere and bumped into this article about this person at Microsoft that had posted
you
this thing on the window.
I
don't remember.
Okay, I'll tell that story.
So I was looking out, and I saw this girl had posted this thing about open source, and I'm like, she works at Microsoft. I'm like, what is going on? Because I'm a big open source guy myself. Have been for years. And I saw it, and I'm like, what the heck? And then I happened to bump into you at the MVP Summit.
What was the post? Was it about the spray painting the window?
Yeah, like you had actually rolled on the window backwards.
Yes.
On like building 42 or
41.
Something like one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you had your office faced out, and you actually wrote stuff backwards.
Embrace open source on CodePlex, and then the time and the meeting room location for some internal training I was doing.
Right, right. But at that time, were you actually working for CodePlex then?
No, I was not working for CodePlex.
Now, why would some random rogue Microsoft employee go embrace open source if you didn't even work for CodePlex at that point?
Well, you don't work for Microsoft, but yet you're doing all these things. It's something that you're passionate about. I was the program manager for the Power Toys for Visual Studio, the team has 11 projects now, maybe more. On CodePlex, but we were one of the first projects from developer division when CodePlex went live. We had three Power Toys up there. So I spent a lot of time internally before CodePlex launched learning about open source software, learning about the CodePlex site, and then when the Power Toys came up, went live, and we had more coming on, I realized just the natural community person that I am, like what I was learning I wanted to share. And I had this internal training about how to use CodePlex for Visual Studio, so that's why I posted it on there. But, yeah, I, even before joining the team, I was pretty excited to go around talking about CodePlex and open source.
Well, let's get into some CodePlex stuff, Sarah. You know, kind of one of the interesting things that we've talked about, you know, like at DevLink and some other areas was CodePlex uses agile programming there to do things with.
Yeah, the agile programming methodology. It's a variant of extreme programming, but then there's like a few other things that are unique to Microsoft Teams developing software. So there's the agile philosophy of we do very short timed releases, a very small iterations on the code base, and we do it every 3 weeks ideally, and we do not have specs. So even though I say I'm the program manager, I'm not like a program manager in the traditional Microsoft spec or sense where I'm not actually writing specifications. But what I am doing is still doing like the feature design. Instead of having a spec, we have wireframes, which are kind of like maybe a one-page spec, if you will. And it gives the developers an idea of where to go. But whenever the developers have questions, that's when I kind of do the just-in-time specing to go in and say, okay, yeah, for this corner case, let's do this. Or for this area that we haven't explored yet, let's go design it this way. Another thing about the questions, too, is we work in one big team room. One of the philosophies of Agile that they are teaching me is that it's all about communication. Whatever is the most efficient way of communicating is ideal. So we all sit together. So if someone has a question, you shout it out. Whether if you're blocked on something or you're not sure about something, you ask it right then and there, and whoever knows it just shouts it back in the room. Or if someone knows how they answer it, they'll get up and come over. So just like in the example of feature development, if the dev discovers a corner case or just turns out that the UI doesn't look good when it's actually being implemented on the website versus on paper, they'll say, hey, Sarah, can you come over here? And then I go over there and I take a look and we'll tweak things and then say, yeah, let's go with that. And then the same for the devs. If they have a question, they shout it out, and then everyone comes over, and whoever can answer it does it right then and there. The other difference with the CodePlex team is that they're doing pair programming for the devs. So the workstations have – sometimes they have – I think all the ones have a multi-monitor display, but they also have two keyboards and two mice. So the devs sit there. One watches the other program. So they're doing code reviews just in time in the same way of like the specs being written just in time or lack thereof a spec. But the idea is that people, there's no sense of ownership that this person owns, quote unquote, this area of the code base, which I've been traditionally brought up and raised in the Microsoft culture that, oh, I own this or I own that. Here it's you have two devs, they work on something, and then maybe one dev says, you know, I'm going to go over there and work on a different part of the code base that's being implemented. And so they'll swap out so that people are constantly rotating so that it's not just one person or even in some cases not just two people that own any or know any part of the code base at any given time.
Okay, so Sarah, how do you build it after these like maniac war room sessions? How's CodePlex built?
What do you mean by maniac war room sessions? I'm not following you. We do this all at the same time. It's every day. This is just any given minute of my life on the team. We all sit in the same room.
So you guys don't have like offices, or if you do have offices, you don't really live in them very much?
None of us have an office. The only person that has an office on the team is Jim Newkirk. But other than that, all of our, quote, offices are in the team room. So think of one big open space where the QA are to my left, the devs and their workstations are right in front of me, and the dev lead is to my right, and the person who handles our support emails and puts together our newsletters and puts together our information about the releases and things like that sits to my right. And, yeah, that's the room.
This must be really different from anything you've ever done.
It took me at least a year or 6 to 9 months, if not – well, I haven't made a year yet. I've been on the team since October, and it was – every day is like something new had clicked, something new, like something again had clicked. It was just so different having to let go of everything I've learned about email, when to set up meetings, who to invite to the meetings, like all of that just goes away. And it was, in a way, I was having to start completely from scratch. And like I said, it's about the most efficient means of communication. So if that person isn't in the room, you check on Instant Messenger. If they're there, okay, IM them. And if they're not, then shoot an email. So it's all about, okay, what's the best way to get my question answered? And you don't have to think about, okay, am I sending them too many emails, not enough emails, things like that. You just let it all go. And it's you're supposed to interrupt them. You're supposed to interrupt everyone. Something that it took months. I mean, it really took months for me to realize I can really go and interrupt the developer. And the dev lead just one day just started laughing. He's like, yes, you really can. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. It just took me forever to let it all go and just ask questions.
Well, that's kind of an interesting point. I mean, most developers like to say, my red light is on. I'm developing code. Don't come bother me. Now, you know, from your angle as a program manager, you get to go bother them and they get to bother you. So does that work, or do they really wish you wouldn't walk over there?
Now that I've seen it, yeah, it works quite well. I can't imagine going back what that process for me would be like. I would probably drive the team crazy if I went to a traditional waterfall, the traditional Microsoft team environment where the dev has closed their door and has a no, do not disturb. And here I am, like, knocking on the door. Hey, you know, I'm supposed to ask you questions if it's going to help the team reach a goal and things like that. I want to know. It would be very interesting what would happen to me going to something else, going back to where I came from.
Yeah, going back the other way now. Hey, Woody, have you actually seen or heard of this in the Agile practices where what she's talking about, like doing the whole, you know, just-in-time interruption thing?
Well, I've seen stuff like that, but usually only in the case of when a project kind of gets behind and they, in a drastic measure, they'll pull people into a room to do kind of like I call it a war room. But I haven't seen too many projects that actually do that from the very beginning and have that as the way that they handle their whole development. No.
Yeah, I haven't either. I mean, so every day when you walk in the door and you start working, you could have 500 interruptions that day, or you could have one.
That's exactly it. That's exactly true.
Now, so you said like you wouldn't go back. So give us some things that are starting to click in your mind. I mean, give us some stories in there that's like, I was fighting this way, and then all of a sudden it clicked, and I was like, aha.
One of the things that was a major light bulb was the idea if you don't have a completed spec, you start with a direction of where you want to go, and you finish it as it's getting developed. That was the hardest thing to figure out, because traditionally you don't hand the dev work, or like a piece of paper, unless that piece of paper is completely baked. Like, they know every little in and out, all the corner cases are known, you know what every piece of UI is going to look like. Here it's like, you know the direction and where you want to go. You have most of it done at a high level, and then as they're implementing, then you start to put the final touches on it. That was one of the major clicks. The communication thing that we talked about was another big click. Testing. I've been learning a lot about software testing from the Agile perspective. How do you test in that environment if you do not have the features baked at the same time? So it's what I'm now starting to see is the dev will ask a question. I'll go over and answer, and then I have to make sure, okay, did we record all the things that we've changed? Because then a week or 2 weeks later, the test team is going to come over to me and say, hey, this is different from the wireframe. Is this a known change? Did we want to make this change, or is it okay? So I have to keep a lot of things going. And so now it's clicked, how do I record all this?
Now, you know, a lot of people think of test, that they think of like TDD and BDD with Agile, like test-driven development and those things. Do you guys do that? Or like you just talking about moving some moving some UI around on the front end. Like, you're not talking like the really low-level API stuff, are you?
When I refer to software testing, I'm referring to the traditional sense of after the dev has implemented the code, the software tester goes in. They already asked that my previous discipline at Microsoft, testing the product following bugs. But we also do unit testing with XUnit, since that's Jim's project.
So here's my question, Sarah. Are you guys using test-driven development? Because that's a sort of a big part of Agile. Some people use BDD or whatever, but...
The devs, they write the test first, then they write the code, and then the software testers test it. So yeah, we're using TDD.
Well, that's cool. It sounds like you guys have a little bit of a unique Agile story, maybe, you know? Has anybody else come and observed your development practices, like inside of Microsoft?
We've had a couple of usability people come, Microsoft Research, and then Paula Bach, who is doing her PhD on open source and usability, and she monitored us extensively this summer for several months on what tools we use, how do we communicate, what do we do. And we've had some teams internally come and watch us during our iteration planning meeting, where we spend about 30 minutes or an hour once every week, and we discuss what is the work that needs to be done for that week. So I'll put together the list of here are the features that need to be implemented, here are the bugs that need to be fixed, and we discuss as a team and agree. There's a team agreement in a way for that week that, yes, this is the work that will be done.
Okay, cool. You know, it would be interesting if you actually maybe put some thoughts down on your blog on that, like, you know, what people are doing with Agile and like, you know, coming for somebody that's actually coming in, and basically for somebody like yourself that had to learn it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, do you think it works?
So the community person in me who loves to share everything that I've learned, as soon as I get time to breathe again from the book and the traveling and the conferences and things like that, I plan to post on my blog a what I've learned thus far program managing an Agile team, and put together like all the things I clicked, all the misinformation or misconceptions that I had about Agile and working in a team room environment.
Very good. I think that would actually be good for a lot of people to hear out there, even internally, for people to get that kind of stuff and have some different, you know, direction and thought processes to build stuff.
Yeah, I definitely plan to share it out both internally and externally to see what are people's reactions. Even internally, those who have been in the Agile space significantly longer than I have, I'm curious what their feedback is on what I've experienced and taken away from it.
What I've noticed is people that once they learn Agile, they have no problem sharing information about Agile.
I've noticed that too. It is really, really cool when you say, yeah, you know, we need to fix that bug. Let's just do it now and get it done. And then, bam, it's deployed in a few weeks. And the dev lead keeps saying, you're never going back. You're never going back now that you've seen it.
Well, we got to get over to the college and do a you have to do a talk. So yep. Let's shut this thing down. Well, Woody, sir, I appreciate your time coming on. Sarah, appreciate you joining us here in Hattiesburg.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Thanks for opening your door to your house and letting me in and not just sending me to some random location in the middle of southern Hattiesburg.
Nice. All right, folks, that's another episode of Deep Fried Bites in the Can. We ask that everybody go out and buy the Visual Studio book that Sarah's putting together. It's an awesome story helping out some folks here in the Mississippi area. So we'd like to remind you that we are out on Twitter/DeepFriedBites, as well as Facebook. You know, we also have a survey on the website. We'd like everybody to go check out. It really helps us to gather demographics and stuff. They're going to ask you a lot of personal questions, but we won't know who you are in either one day, so you don't put your name on it. Just fill out some stupid questions. That helps us with our advertisers and things to keep the show going. So that's it, folks. Until next time, keep your tea glasses full and your axes sharp.
Thanks, y'all.
Bye-bye. Mr. Woody, how are you, sir? Redo that because I forgot to mute. Ready? Mr. Woody, what's up, sir? Well, man, I'm doing great. I'm sitting here with Mrs. Actually, it's Miss Sarah Ford.
Yes.
Henry Ford.
Miss Sarah Ford.
Hey, y'all. Here in the house of, no, the house O Elder.
That's right, folks. We're sitting down here today at Deep Fried Bites with Codeplex Program Manager for Microsoft, Sarah Ford. Sarah is actually in the house. And when I mean sitting down, we're really sitting down in the house. She's actually in Hattiesburg, Mississippi today, which is where I live. And she's going to be speaking at the Hub City Nug.
Stupid phone. What the?
Let's
Yeah, let's kill the track.